In these trying times, we could all use a little diversion. Watch Mark Stein's readings of work by poets from Robert Browning to Robert Service in Stein's Sunday Poems. Whether it's Keats's Ode on a Grecian Urn, John McCrae's In Flanders Fields, or James Montgomery's Greenland, Stein brings you the rhyme, rhythm, and reason behind classics and lesser-known delights. Stein's Sunday Poems are available exclusively at www.steinonline.com for members of the Mark Stein Club. View the full catalog at www.steinonline.com/poems.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. And now, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. The last day of April 2025, one third of the new year gone. It is 3 p.m. in the Canadian parliamentary riding of Elgin St. Thomas, London South, where Andrew Lawton's election victory is so convincing, it may even be safe for him to be photographed with me again. 4 p.m. in the beautiful but doomed Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous but equally doomed Newfoundland and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Madrid and Lisbon, where the lights are promised to return pretty soon, 10 p.m. in Jerusalem, where Israeli Independence Day ceremonies have been cancelled because persons unknown have set the entire country alight, and the winds are whipping the flames around to the few spots they missed. 10:30 p.m. in Tehran, for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone. 12:45 in Kathmandu, for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers. You know I'm sorry about that. 6 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, where Australians will be holding their own election disaster in a couple of days' time. I'm even sorrier about that. 8 a.m. in Auckland, and an even more convivial hour for the Kippers and Kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 80 years ago today, April 30th, 1945, as artillery shells bombarded the city and Soviet troops were within 500 yards, Adolf Hitler and his bride of the previous day, Eva Braun, sat on a sofa in the study of their bunker under the German Chancellery. Frau Hitler put a cyanide pill to her teeth, and her Führer put a pistol to his temple. Then she bit down on the capsule, and he pulled the trigger. Hitler's valet found them shortly afterwards, both still sitting more or less upright, although a large blood stain on the sofa arm dripping to the floor and then pooling on the carpet told the valet that the deed had been done. Admiral Dönitz succeeded the late Herr Hitler, but as mere head of state rather than Führer. 80 years ago today. 50 years ago today, April 30th, 1975, Saigon fell to the North Vietnamese. You will have seen the famous photographs of desperate men and women scrambling for the helicopters atop the roof of the U.S. Embassy. Nothing like it until the fall of Kabul in 2021, with men falling from the undercarriage of the American plane taking off from Hamid Karzai International Airport. as it was hilariously known back then. I think it's now been renamed Sword of the Infidel Slayer International Airport. Many years ago, I was having dinner with Nicholas Heitner at Cafe Pelican in London. I think it was on the Charing Cross Road. I don't suppose it's there anymore. Anyway, Nick Heitner is the great director of plays like The Madness of George III and its subsequent film adaptation, The Madness of King George. And he also directed the original production of Miss Saigon by Alain Boublil and Claude-Michel Schoenberg, the guys who wrote Les Miserables. And he'd just come from a script meeting with them. And so he tossed the script on the table at me, open at a page toward the end where there was a bit of dialogue or song or whatever, and then a stage direction. A helicopter lands. And he said to Alain and Claude Michel, "How's that going to work?" And Alain shrugged and said, "It's a director's problem." Well, Nick Heitner pulled it off brilliantly when the show opened, much better than the original helicopters in 1975. The Fall of Saigon, 50 years ago today, April the 30th. Okay, let's get to your questions. And as you know, I thought there was a great deal of significance to the power going out. Actually, apparently, the entire European electrical grid was within seconds of taking out the entire continent. It spread very rapidly from Spain to Portugal and then to southern France, but it could have swept all the way north to Finland and east to Ukraine, and it certainly demonstrated a certain vulnerability. And we've had a couple of questions on what I think is a related topic. Keith Marsden puts it as its simplest. Mark, what do you think about the UK admitting to geoengineering the weather so they can diminish sunshine? Yeah, this is for any listeners of ours in the UK who feel that, generally speaking, the British Isles has way too much sunshine and we could do with less. The government in London is going to implement a plan, basically Bill Gates's plan, to turn off the sun. Yeah, that's going to work. You know, we've had the thing about this is if you don't get, I mean, I see these, I'm sometimes sent a link to something on the internet, you know, saying, "Oh, well, just because COVID was a disaster and didn't work, doesn't mean that all expertise is wrong." No, but then there's no sign yet of the prudence that we, I mean, this interconnected grid in Europe, okay, so that if you do it right, if you do it right, and people have got different explanations for this, people say, "Oh, it might be the Chinese." The last time I checked, the Chinese own the electricity in Portugal. That's how nuts the world is. And then someone said, "Oh, yeah, but if they were going to do a cyber attack like this, why would they waste time with second-rank countries like Spain and Portugal?" Yeah, I remember that back when North Korea threatened to nuke Montreal about 20 years ago, a little more, 25 years ago, just before the turn of the century. North Korea threatened to nuke Montreal. And the thinking behind North Korea doing that is that if you nuke, this is slightly relevant to the Canadian election, if you nuke Los Angeles, say, the Americans are going to get steamed and they'll nuke you back. But if you nuke, and that's not just Los Angeles, but that applies to Chicago or Boston or wherever. Whereas if you nuke a Canadian city, nobody's going to nuke you back. And that was the thinking there. And I don't know whether that's, if it was North Korea, who knows who any of these things are. But if That would be a good way to start, to take out the Spanish and Portuguese electricity. And in fact, if it had gone on the critical phase for a few more seconds, it would have spread on a hugely disastrous scale. But the point here is that the experts have bollocksed everything that can be wrecked. COVID was a disaster even before you get to the vaccines, which have seen the spectacular increase in myocarditis in young men and a fertility collapse in women. Why would you then want... So you say, oh, well, yeah, okay, but that was just like one thing, you know. It doesn't mean like we shouldn't have a stop sign on the road, does it? That's an expert. It was an expert who came up with that, you know. Oh, that's okay. It's nice to have a, maybe, up to a point, not up to the American thing where you have stop signs and stop sign approaching signs and stop sign approaching a stop sign approaching signs. But it might be, it's nice to have a stop sign on Cherry Blossom Lane. When you're saying, oh yeah, we're going to put Bill Gates, the guy who gave us Windows 98, in charge of taking out the sun, how do you think that's going to work? I don't even get this bollocks anymore. I mean, the thing is, you know, oh, so we're now moving to solar power. Oh, that sounds great. Solar power. Like that. Do allow me to disfigure my beautiful house with solar panels all over the roof just because I want my neighbours to know that I'm all for the solar panel. Oh, dear me. Bill Gates has turned out the sun. What about my solar panels? Anyway, I don't think that's going to work. Queen of the Jungle, on a related theme, says, greetings, Mark. Hope you're enjoying the beautiful spring weather. I get a bit prone to sad, I must, that whatever that's called, that seasonal affective disorder. The certain things I like in the beautiful north country of northern New England, northern New Hampshire specifically. I do love late winter when you get like the February sunshine on a frozen lake. It's just beautiful to look out the window at that. Anyway, Queen of the Jungle says, as you've been one of the leading climate change skeptics regarding man-made global warming, etc., I would like you to comment on the current fiasco that is taking place with the recent geoengineering schemes that have been devised by the likes of Satan's little helper, Bill Gates and his ilk. Yeah, this is the plan to seed the sky. Hopefully, Bobby Kennedy and Lee Zeldin are onto this and doing something on the federal level to stop it before it's too late. Many states have passed laws to ban chemtrails in their skies, but that's a little like having a no-peeing section of a swimming pool, if you get my drift. How the hell are they getting away with this? Well, yeah, this is what, again, it's a point I made in a book called After America, which came out in 2011. And there's a little passage in there about how, talking about these schemes that not just Bill Gates, but people like Bloomberg and that. Who was that idiot third-rate crap actor who was became governor of California? What was his name? Oh, yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger. These guys. Right now, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think this is the bit I had in the book, is he was governor of a state called California, where the emergency rooms of the hospitals became basically the family doctor for all the illegal aliens and all the other residents without health insurance. So the emergency system in the hospitals had collapsed. In fact, collapsed so... So I didn't get it, never having gone to a California hospital, but I flew in to give a talk once, years and years ago, and I was bemoaning how long you had to wait in Canadian emergency wards because the system is so lousy. And the examples I gave, the... All the people in the room just sort of look, yeah, big deal. You should try it at San Bernardino. Because with all the illegals filling up their emergency wards, it was even worse there. But that's the point, that Arnold Schwarzenegger, if you say, well, can you do something? I can't. I had to wait 48 hours in a hospital to be treated for my gunshot wound. Could you do something about that? He'll say, oh, no, that's all very complicated. Oh, what about all these borders, these open borders? You know, I hear there's some guy in New York who wants to put a wall up there. Oh, no, it's very, very porous border. You can't do any. I mean, people can just walk across the Rio Grande and walk into the country. You're not going to be able to. So these people don't think they can do. This is government. It is a now core principle of government. So if we take the British example of Sir Keir Starmer signing on to Bill Gates's thing to turn out the sun to lower the planet's temperature, right? Keir Starmer is the first minister of the United Kingdom. So his responsibility as head of government is to the United Kingdom. He can't stop Albanian sex traffickers washing up on the shores of southern England and being ferried to four-star country house hotels to be given everything they need so they can recover from the journey before going out and sex-slaving nine-year-old girls. He can't do anything about that. But if you say to him, oh, controlling the very heavens, yes, yes, getting a James Bond villain with the world's biggest moobs and putting him in charge of taking out the sun, that we can do. Enforcing the borders, we can't do. Ensuring that old people don't die freezing because they can no longer afford to heat their homes or afford to eat, he can't do that. But ensuring they'll be even colder by taking out the sun, that he can do. These people are mad. They are Bond villains. Bill Gates is, as I said, his moves are so awful that he'd probably be a Daniel Craig period Bond villain. He wouldn't be a Golden Age Bond villain with moves like that. But basically, we've got Bond villains in charge of government now. And that's what that's about. By the way, the chemtrails, I don't think I've ever talked about chemtrails. These are these things which you assume are, you know, when you look up in the sky and there's these sort of white trails and you think, oh, that must be a long, very thin cloud. Or it's the exhaust of some jet that's coming across. And then you think, well, wait a minute. Jets never come across here. So what's all that about? It's like conspiracy theory central. And I didn't think much about it because you got to pick your conspiracy theories if you're going to sign on with them. But I was reading I read two very interesting pieces over at The Conservative Woman. You can go over there, you can find them fairly easily. And they're by Lieutenant General Jonathan Riley, who was a guest on the Mark Steyn Show. And we used to get into a bit of disagreement and a bit of this and that over certain things. But he's not a fringe crackpot. He was he was the British commander of forces in Sierra Leone when Tony Blair sent the troops in there. And actually, he didn't send a lot of troops in. I think it was like 23 Royal Marines or whatever. But actually, that was one of the more successful military interventions of the last 30 years. And then he was commander of British forces in Iraq as well. So he's served all over the place. He's a mainstream figure. He's not, as I said, he's not someone. He's just waking up, looking out his window at the skies and going, oh, my God. And he actually, he says if you, I think this was with reference to the United Arab Emirates or whatever, that if you look at the experiments they admit to with this seeding of the heavens, You know, in other words, we've accepted Bill Gates has just and Keir Starmer have just told us they are going to be manipulating the heavens. So why wouldn't chemtrails be real? Okay, they've let's say they're not as just totally incompetent wankers as they are, and they've been testing their manipulation of the heavens for some years, you know, before they give Bill Gates a monopoly on the sky. So let's say they've been doing these, trying this and trying that for a few years. I mean, that's basically what certain governments have admitted to. This, you know, where they've done mostly to produce more rainfall, right? But that's the point now. Once Bill Gates has control of a genetically modified sky, you can't then say, oh, I'm not having anything to do with that. Just sounds awful, that. I'm going to go to the artisan bio-vegan supermarket and insist on getting a non-genetically modified sky. There's only one sky, so once Bill Gates is in charge of it, you can kiss the sky goodbye. There, it's going to be the Windows 98 of skies. I don't want to go there. The experts have screwed everything. What happened in Spain and Portugal on Monday is your future. You think, oh, that's just the Euro pusses. You don't think the interconnected North American grid, which is, you know, so it's Trump, bits of it are Trumpian and other bits of it are Mark Carney, you know. You don't think that's, we have bet the farm on high-tech systems that are enormously vulnerable. And that's the point of it, that it should be on, it should be vulnerable. They don't stop with the nuttiness. There's a clip I saw earlier today of a bioethicist, which is a laugh and a half, a bioethicist at the World Economic Forum. And he's talking about how eating meat is bad for the planet. But unfortunately, a lot of people are addicted to meat. That's to say, they like having half-pound cheeseburger, you know. And then when they've had the half-pound cheeseburger on Tuesday, they fancy another one on Wednesday. And that's the point. So you can't wait, because the climate change is so bad now that you can't wait for people, more people to give up the meat so that there's less bovine flatulence and that lowers the temperature of the planet. Fortunately, there are ways that we can genetically modify people, right? So they can, you there, right? Having the big T-bone steak, we'll start with you. We can genetically modify you so you don't want to eat red meat anymore. And by the way, if you don't take up the handy pills we're providing for you on that, we're just going to put it in the next vaccine we come up with. I mean, these people wanted to vaccinate everybody on the planet, right? So they suddenly, oh, the world won't be safe until everyone is vaccinated from 107 down to 6 weeks old. You know, it's not a conspiracy when you're looking at governments that can't keep the roads in good repair, can't keep the Albanian sex traffickers out, can't deport a quote-unquote Maryland man to El Salvador without thousands of judges ruling that it's the biggest constitutional crisis in the history of the Republic. But somehow this same regime, which can't do bugger all, is going to be able to turn off the sun and genetically modify you. These people are stuck. We're, as I said, we're just the craziest. I always lose interest in the MacGuffin in a Bond film. I don't really, you know, oh yeah, he's got a space laser and he's pointing it at every capital city until they give him $1 million. Yeah, that makes sense. I can just about grasp that. And I lose interest when it gets to the last 20 minutes and Bond's broken into the hollowed out volcano and he's running around shooting all the minions in their golf carts. It's all totally boring, all that. But these people are coming up with schemes that are crazier than Bond villains. Alison Castellina says, do you think there could be a silver lining inside the dark cloud of potential blackouts? In that we are now being told to keep cash to prepare for just such an eventuality and food and water for several days. Well, let's put it this way, that there are people who, well, for a start, there are all those survivalists who are always, as far as I can tell, half the radio shows I catch in this neck of the woods are all sponsored by companies that make food supplies that will last for like 25 years. And you order them up, and that way when the EMP attack takes place, you'll be okay. Except you won't be, because the looters will be breaking in and stealing all your stuff. It's just going to be horrible and bloody when the EMP attack happens. But we all know this, that there are people who, without getting enough prefabricated food for the next 25 years, do... No, the minute the lights go out all the time in New Hampshire. It's the wind, because everything was electrified basically in the 1930s. So they put all these poles. It was some sort of FDR federal make work project. So they put all these poles, electrical poles, along the ridgelines of the mountains. So if there's a power outage, as there is all the time, if ever there's a slight breeze, the guys who repair it have to sort of hike to find the point where it all went down. They have to hike, 3 days up the hill. So so there are people among my neighbours who, if the lights go out, they suddenly know, oh, yep, the electric flashlight is here, and I've got some candles and whatnot here, and I've got this and that there, and it's a good thing I put some food in, and all the rest of it. There are people like that, and there's like one, but there's one in 100 like that, and all the other 99 are just going, oh, what the hell happened? Well, it might come on again in another... just in a couple of minutes, look, it flickered there. That was good. It flickered there. If there's another flicker, I might try finding my way to the toilet. You know, so there's one guy who's perfectly prepared for any eventuality, and the other 99, because that's the thing. As civilization, everyone talks about the EMP attack. And they go, well, you know, and it could just happen, which is what happens when a nuke is detonated in the upper atmosphere and it crashes everything. So it wipes out all your bank records, and your cars are all computerized now. So unless you've got an Edsel, it's not going to work. And we're back to the mid-19th century. But the point to remember about that is we're back to the mid-19th century having lost all the skills that were taken for granted in the mid-19th century. I tried to teach my sons this, but, you know, they were on their smartphones, so they weren't. I said everybody should be able to shingle a roof. It's not difficult. It's like you shouldn't really need a skilled person for that. You should just be, oh, look, that shingle's split in two. And you should be able to just lean your ladder against the wall and hop up there and do a bit of shingling. That's basic. I did it with my daughter, who was less resistant to the idea than her brothers were, because there was a roof shingling episode in Little House on the Prairie, and in the book. I don't think they televised it because it's incredibly boring. I kept thinking, oh look, dad's up on the roof shingling. Oh, this is going to be tragic. He's going to fall off and he'll break his back, and the family will be. I thought there was going to be a point to him shingling up on the roof, but it wasn't. He was just shingling on the roof. And where now? This idea that, oh, you don't have to worry about the EMP attack because we'll just be back to the mid-19th century. We'll be back there having lost all the skills. You look at the people around you. Huh? Do you think people who worry about pronouns are going to be great after the EMP attack? Anyway, Tim Boggs says, is this Alberta thing for real? This is the plan. The day after the election, Danielle Smith, who is one of Canada's better politicians. I had one conversation with her in Ottawa a few years ago. She's got sound instincts, but her sense of timing here is impeccable. The day after the election, she announced that Alberta, which it gets nothing out of Confederation, Alberta she's going to fast track the requirements for calling for a referendum. So you no longer need 600,000 signatures. You only need, I think, 111,000 or whatever. And you've got, instead of just having 90 days to collect them, she's going to give you 120 days to collect them. And Alberta has no reason to stay in Canada. Quebec does. Quebec's so-called independence movement, sovereignty movement, is a complete fraud. It's just a trick. It's a very good trick to just screw more money out of Ottawa. But that money they get comes at the expense of places that are genuinely chafing under the crappy deal they get, such as Alberta. Now, this doesn't mean Alberta's going to join America. I'm not in favor of that at all. I'm all for small countries. I'm all for small. America doesn't need to get any bigger. You can have like a territory if you want to annex Greenland or take back the Panama Canal. But to make actual real places states, America doesn't need. We need more small countries. Because if there's one thing we should have learned in the last few years, is that bigness is part of the problem. The COVID's the most extreme example, where everybody thought the same, apart from Sweden. But it's made worse by the fact that if you have large entities centrally directed, like, say, France is quite a big country, a lot of people, and everything is very centralized. And the line used to be that if America had been as centralized as France, it would have split up before 1800. But America was a decentralized federation that has become progressively more centralized over the last century. So there's no reason why an independent Alberta would have to join any country. It can be a perfectly fine country on its own. And they could do deals, energy deals, with Canada, or what survives of Canada, and with the United States and anything else. But it is for real. They're screwed. The thing about it is their slogans reflect it. 20 years ago, I think it was Alberto wants in. They don't want in now because they know they're never going to be given the kid glove treatment that Quebec wants. So and right now, they're just looking at being screwed on a scale they have not yet contemplated. Robert Bridges writes, Mark, is there something of a genetic aberration in the present Commonwealth of Nations that has turned the major participants into Orwellian authoritarian states? The UK, Canada, Australia and New Zealand are becoming more like Zimbabwe every day. Canada training the People's Liberation Army in winter warfare to go toe-to-toe with India, which is another Commonwealth member. Will Alberta finally realise that they are suffering from battered province syndrome, that's very well put, and understand that things will not get better if they give Ottawa and Toronto one more chance to love them? Can Trump create a rescue centre to start the healing? Again, it gets back to my, you don't leave one big nation to join another big nation. You've got to be serious about it. It's very interesting to read about the size of nations. All the people are like, right now, America's entire foreign policy establishment has been kissing the butt of Qatar, but which will always be Qatar to me, because that's how we called it in our childhood when it was a British protectorate. Qatar's got a third of a million people, something like that, and it has and it's responsible for more than 10% of the world's energy. There's a lot of everywhere you look. There's every, even Trump recognizes that when he says, why don't we get more immigrants from Norway? Norway's 5 million people. Singapore, you know, that's the thing. Why do you want to be, particularly when nobody's having any babies? Right. So your source. Oh, yes, I want to be in a big. I thought where it's a third of a billion people now. There's no reason why we can't have half a billion people. Right. And where are they going to come from? They're going to be more Maryland men, right? You want more Maryland men? But that's as to whether there's a genetic predisposition to lunacy from what we called and what I still call the senior dominions, UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. I think you can make the case that to one degree or another, the continentals, just to leave America out of this for a moment, but the continentals generally are less nuts than His Majesty's dominions. In other words, and to bring America back in, most of the nutty ideas are American ideas, like, women with penises and stuff like that. But they've been taken up most eagerly, the craziness, in the senior dominions, in speaking of the common. India is not nutty in the way that Canada is, for example. So we have a situation. People are now, it's basically end stage civilization, this. And it's a shame. The thing I like about so-called Western civilization, at least as it was spread around the world by the English, is that it's not a self-contained civilization as China largely is or India largely is. It's a synthesis of elements such as Rome and Athens. And so it was very skillful for a long time at taking the best elements of the past and synthesizing them into something very distinct and functioning. But the things that people... Oh, England went all around the world and spread their legal system. Well, I wouldn't actually want that to happen now. If you've been, as I have, had the misfortune to be in an English courthouse in the last couple of years. Oh, but it had... England came up with this fantastic education system and it spread it to every corner of the world. Yeah, well, that doesn't work now. You know, because to take the American education system, that was supposed to be the idea in Iraq, that what happened... Rumsfeld and I had a long conversation about this 20 years ago, that when the troops toppled Saddam Hussein, all the ministries in his government, you know, so the Iraqi treasury was taken over by the United States treasury. And the Iraqi Department of Agriculture was taken over by the United States Department of Agriculture. And the Iraqi education system was taken over by the American education system. And I said to Rumsfeld, well, that's not going to work, is it? They're even more anti-American than Saddam. And he laughed at that. Because it happens to be true. So I don't think, I don't know whether it's a genetic bio, a genetic disposition or whatever, but I think I think the jig is up now. I think the king is bonkers, and it's very difficult, you know, it's very difficult for monarchies to survive a bad king. When the bad king has no idea. I mean, this ass, I really loathe him. I loathe every aspect about him. We're people who are conflicted. As you know, if you watch the Mark Stein show at the time of the coronation, Alexandra Marshall, who is brilliant and has made the Australian Spectator much better than the London edition. Alexandra is a member of Australians on the board of Australians for Constitutional Monarchy or whatever it's called. And Samantha was visiting us at the time of the Queen's death and was taken over the border on the actual day back to Canada, because she felt a bit funny about being on foreign soil when the only queen she's known had died. But the point here is that this king is far more disastrous than I thought he'd be. This idea that he holds an Ishtar, whatever it is, to celebrate breaking the fast for Ramadan in the evening, at Windsor Castle. That means now that nobody will ever not be able to hold one. That means it's now a tradition. He won't be able to say next year, oh, I don't really feel like holding an Ishtar this year. He gave that away to a demographic that, with small numbers, is supremely aggressive about annexing the public space. He's such an ass. And because he has the thing, the Queen's thing, you know, I can't remember how many times I met the Queen over the year. I think it was three times. But the point about the Queen was she didn't think she was a great intellectual. She loved it. When the Guardian would complain about how intellectually uncurious she was, her whole thing was that a queen had to be. So a queen shouldn't be demonstrating that she's one of the geniuses of the age by jetting into Klaus Schwab's hollowed-out Alp and making the promo for the so-called Great Reset, which they introduced at the beginning of COVID. I'm in favor of a regency, if you could find anyone competent enough to be regent. On the evidence of recent governors general in Canada, that's tricky. Jack Edwards says, Trump said countries like Canada and China, who retaliated against his Liberation Day tariffs, would be last in line in future negotiations. Will he stick to that, and shall we see Carney go from blusterer to beggar? Look, the whole Trump, I don't think he said this to Carney, but he did say it to Justin. He brought up the trade deficit that America has with Canada and said and suggested that it could be eliminated. And Justin explained that Canada could not survive that, that it would basically go bankrupt as it's going to go. You know, I feel, because I understand Americans have no real interest in Canada unless there's a Canadian pop star or a Canadian comedian they happen to like. But there's no reason, even with Canada's proximity to the United States, why Canada should be an economic dependency of the United States. There is no reason for that at all, except that it has been allowed to happen. Basically, just to put in big picture terms, the 1950 moment is coming to an end. It's coming to an end for a bunch of reasons, and there's enough blame for all parties. It's basically it's an American 1950 moment. It's the moment when, in 1950, when America stood alone because any rivals for great power had their cities bombed to smithereens during the Second World War. What happened then is that, but America didn't think like former great powers. It's not an imperial power. It doesn't have an imperialist bone in its body, which is why, one reason why all these calls for all war all the time from the permanent state in Washington don't resonate with anybody in the country, because they don't see, you know, they don't, yeah, okay, Ukraine's all a bit complicated, and yeah, there's Ukrainians and there's Russians and there's some Ukrainians who want to be both Ukrainian and Russian, but I'm getting a bit of a headache now because I don't see what's that's got to do with us. And so instead it's set up all these multinational institutions like the United Nations and all the World Health Organization and all these other bodies that over time became explicitly anti-American, because people figured out that if you're a diminished nation of little consequence, the way to do it is to get together with the other diminished nations of little consequence and use these international organizations as a sort of proxy great power rival to the United States. It's a system America built. It's a system. I mean, the World Health Organization is the perfect example of it, because it was, until Trump came along, it was basically funded by America but run by China. You know, so this system is at its end because it hasn't worked. It's basically a system by which, as we said last time, the United States pays for everything for some of the wealthiest nations in history. And it hasn't done them any favors, because basically the world is like Qatar, except it doesn't have 10% of the world's energy. And you think about that. You control 10% of the world's energy, but you only have 250,000 people. So that means that nobody really has to work terribly hard. You've got money to pay them to do nothing all day long, and all the drudge work is done by people you bring in from Pakistan. So it's worked out great in a certain sense. But if you apply it to, say, Germany or the Netherlands or whatever, and you just say, okay, we don't have to raise enough money for an army now, so that means we can afford to give you free healthcare and cradle-to-grave welfare, and you can retire at 52 and a half and all the rest of it. The point about that is it isn't good for you, and it isn't good for the person writing the check to cover all that. So it's just made everything worse. These aren't real countries anymore. I mean, they're living on the fumes of a great civilizational inheritance. But, you know, at some point there'll come a time when there'll be a Muslim rampage through all the great vineyards. So your Mouton Rothschild will be up in flames. You know, they basically, this whole 1950 moment has been a disaster. I'm getting a bit carried away and getting, I went a bit far afield on that. It's the thing that if I wasn't tied up in litigation all bloody day long, I would have. There's been a development on that. We might have to do an update about that. We had some sua sponte order. If you don't know what that means, I think it was the old Ink Spot song, was it? When the swallows return to sua sponte. I love that song. Anyway, this is Stein Online's Clubland Q&A live around the planet. And now, hopelessly late as we always are, here is the high point ever since we axed all the music on our Clubland Q&A. But we do have, people love this bit, because Mark Stein swings by just for 30 seconds to tell you all about our weekend music show. Go, Mark. This is Mark Stein on The Town this week. Songs across the century and around the world. Singers and songwriters talk about their number one records. Plus, Willie Nelson sings Al Jolson and Frank Sinatra sings Happy Birthday. All coming up on The Town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. Yeah, and 5 p.m. London time is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 12 midday in North American Eastern. As you might have gathered from that happy birthday reference, it's actually the first anniversary, first birthday of our weekend music show. So it's like a year since I got all passive-aggressive about cancelling the, taking the music out of the show. So as people had been complaining for years... I think at least 8 years, that now we can talk more about who's 2 points up in Iowa. Honestly, I can't stand the... We are going to need more than politicians to get out of the mess we're in. And the mess is very... there's a huge difference, particularly between the... I mean, basically, this is America alone again. You know, there's a certain portion of Americans who are demonstrating the will to push back against this globalist, elitist codswallop. But it's not as many Americans as it should be. Yes. It's more than in Ireland, and it's more than in Canada. But it's not as many as there should be. And you're not going to, you know, Canada is a perfect example of that. Saturday's Australian election with these people. There's a professional class of consultants. Why did Trump win in 2016? Because he didn't have any consultants. He didn't have all the professionals, like Mike Murphy. When I predicted that Trump was going to win the primary season. And Mike Murphy wrote to me and said, Stein, you're out of it. This isn't going to happen. Let's say he wins the New Hampshire primary. Okay, so then that's going to give him a big bounce going into the South Carolina primary. But the South Carolina primary is all dependent on TV advertising, and Jeb has bought all... Mike Murphy was advising Jeb. Jeb has bought all the television spots in South Carolina. So even if Trump wins New Hampshire, he won't be able to go anywhere from there. And as we know, Jeb still on the ballot by South? But this is the thing, this professional class, they're not representatives of the people. You don't go and vote for Mike Murphy or the equivalent wankers in the Canadian system, the one who told Pierre Poilievre, oh, you need to get ahead of this Christine Anderson thing. Christine Anderson, delightful lady, had a very agreeable dinner with her after she did the Mark Stein show. She wants to save her country, right? She wants to save her country from mass migration, which is the biggest threat. It basically is, we're all like Eva Braun sits. This will be good. We're not Hitler. We're Eva Braun. We're sitting in the bunker, biting down on a cyanide pill. where basically Europe and North America and Australia and New Zealand are committing suicide. Mass migration's the issue. Yeah, but you got to win big to be able to deal with it. It's one of those 80% issues. You know, I don't know whether we'll see it tomorrow because Nigel can be his own worst enemy. But in the local elections, in all these Labour towns, you know, these towns where the so-called white slags, the so-called packy shaggers, get gang raped and sex slaved, these are all Labour towns, right? And at a certain point, They tell pollsters, oh, yeah, I'd like less immigration. Yeah, I don't really see why my gran should have died shivering when some Albanian sex trafficker straight off the boat gets put up at a 4-star country house hotel. You know, you have to. Politics is about persuasion. Now, when I think back to monk debate that I did with Nigel Farage, you know, I got annoyed at Simon Sharma and Louise Arbour painting Nigel as me and me as sex fiends who couldn't get enough action because we were talking about little girls being raped. And Nigel actually is a sex fiend who can't get enough action. But the point is we were talking about little girls being raped in Germany and in France and all over Europe. And it seemed odd to me that Simon Sharma should find that funny. And so I did a little bit of righteous indignation and I pushed back on it. And I talked about people who, you know, I remember mentioning a German case where some kid got raped in his local city hall, just like the girl in Oldham in northern England got picked up and taken off to be gang raped all night long. She got picked up in the lobby of the Oldham police station. You know, and we had the biggest swing. I think what was at that time the moderator, Rudyard, he said that it was the biggest swing they'd ever had in the monk debate. In fact, the late Mr. Monk, who I happened to see at George Jonas's memorial a few weeks later, he said that, well, he confirmed that was the biggest swing from one side to another they ever had. You can change people's minds. And if you are frightened about doing that, like Peter Tweedledutton is in Australia, and as Pierre Poilievre was, I mean, Pierre Poilievre said, oh, we just want people to come here and accept our values. Yeah, well, that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. You know, what you do when you import the third world on the scale of what most Western nations have done is you turn into the third world and you import the quarrels of the third world. It's not difficult. It's the biggest single thing. So if you're Pierre Poilievre on that, the likelihood that you're going to be butch on anything other than a few peripheral things is very slim. You've got to, and we can't just say, oh, yeah, I know, but it's all a bit difficult. So instead of trying to persuade the voters, who are all appallingly left-wing, for the most part, I've decided instead to let them persuade me. So I didn't change their mind. Instead, they've changed my mind, such as it is. This is awful. You know, we're running out of election. The Muslim population of Canada quadrupled. Let me work this out. Is that right? It was 500,000 in the year 2000. In the 2000 census, it was 500,000 Muslims in Canada. In the 2020 census, it was 2 million. So it increased by 4 in the space of 20 years. So if it does the same again by 2040, it'll be 8 million, right? And at that point, no one's going to say anything. You know, and we are now in 2025 And this election, the electoral cycle between now and 2030 is basically the last chance to persuade people to get serious about it. Most people don't want to get serious. They'd rather just watch crap telly, listen to crap songs, and if their children and grandchildren wind up living in a semi-Muslim society, oh, well, you know, there's so many nice Muslim countries, don't you think? This is, we're running, as I said, I don't want to sound like the climate change guys, but imagine if it had happened the same way with, from 500,000 to 2 million in 20 years, right? And this is at a time when Canada is participating, not fairly lethargically, in wars with Islamic countries all over the place. With, oh, yes, yeah, we can't, we like dithered around in Afghanistan for 20 years, but it had a great upside in that we imported 1.5 million more Muslims to a country that was then of 30 million. Let's see what we have here. Elisa Angel says, what does Canada's future hold, great Swami Stein? Will it be an independent country, several independent countries, the US's 51st state, a Chinese territory, or something else? Well, that's the if Trump. Somebody said this to me in the last couple of days. I can't remember who said this to me now. I should probably give them credit. But somebody said to me that to neutralize the so-called Trump issue, Pierre Poilievre could just have said, I'm going to send Conrad Black to negotiate with Trump at Mar-a-Lago. I'll appoint him as special, because he's done deals with Trump. Second time I met Donald J. Trump was, I think it was around the turn of the century, about 20 years ago now, in Conrad's office in New York, which at that time, before the federal government took it away from him in America, was across the street from Trump Tower. And Trump came over because they were negotiating the sale of the Chicago Sun-Times building that Conrad owned. And he wanted to sell it to Trump, and Trump wanted to put up the world's tallest building there. Then, you know, that changed a bit after what happened at the World Trade Center. But so Conrad's already done deals. The idea that he's done deals with Trump. He knows how he thinks, you know. Oh, that would have been a way to... I think that would have been a way to neutralize the issue in a fairly serious way. It's certainly more, I'd rather have Conrad negotiating with Trump than Mark Carney, if you're looking at it from Canada's point of view. But the point here is, if there is an interest, Canada has been completely hollowed out by China. Everybody is on the take from China. Everybody thinks it's funny. China, some guy spoke out against China, and the Chinese Communist Party put a bounty on his head, and liberal members did jokes about how it'd be great to take this guy and turn him in at the Chinese consulate for the reward money. China has completely hollowed out Canada. For all I know, I mean, I don't know, I can't see it myself, but my jaw wouldn't drop all the way to the floor if it turned out that Andrew Lawton is an operative of China. I mean, they've gone everywhere. I don't mean that, Andrew. You know I don't. I am so very solid. Is that Japanese? I don't know. Anyway... I shouldn't be making jokes about Andrew, because he's been elected to Parliament and Pierre Poilievre hasn't. So at this rate, Andrew's going to be a leader of His Majesty's loyal opposition by this time next week. And he'll be able to freeze my bank account. anyway, what was I saying now? Andrew Lawton, leader of the opposition, freezing my bank account. Well, oh yeah, here's the thing. There's a legitimate... If you've got China, if you've got the Chinese Communist Party hollowing out your immediate neighbour That is a national security interest of the United States. But it's not going to be a 51st, no Canadian. I mean, again, this is a particular, America is a, you know, is a revolutionary nation. And it's what, as all the National Review types say, it's a proposition nation. So the whole way that they think is that it's the magic soil theory, that simply by setting foot in America, a nice MS-13 gangbanger who beats his wife becomes a Maryland man. It's magic. It's magic. And that's how a lot of Americans think. But that's not how that's America. That's a product of America's peculiar history and latterly the distortion of its own history. But most people don't think like that. A Finn thinks he's a Finn just because he's born in Finland. A Slovak thinks he's a Slovak because he's born in Slovakia. It's no more or less than that. And I'm just thinking about a track I wanted to play on Saturday's music show. This is like a huge... I got into when I started thinking about the composer, who's a 19th century Romanian, but some people think he ought to be classified as a 19th century Serb because he's a Romanian of Serb descent or whatever. This idea that you can take any part of the world and make it the 51st state, I don't think is... And I'm on record now, and I mean it. I'm in New Hampshire. I can barely stand being next door to Vermont. You know, so the idea of then wanting to take in actual literal foreigners, I find slightly bizarre. We need actually smaller countries. I think that it's as basic as this. Can you, which America is on course to be by the end of the century, but I would like to hear from some of the constitutional fetishists and all the rest. That constitution was designed for a few homogeneous East Coast colonies. Can you apply it to 500 million people, whereas J.D. Vance said in Munich at the European Wankers Conference, you know, that America has this whole foreign birth problem, the same foreign birth problem that Germany has. It's actually very hard to make a coherent nation, particularly when all the most people who matter in your nation are committed to destroying what little cohesion there is. So we have all this bollocks about values. Here's a tip, conservative, you know, when you're looking for your next conservative leader, once, if you have anyone talking about values, is where nations go to die. You know, we share the same value. Oh, like what? Equal treatment of women? Well, no, not that one. But the other values we share. Oh, what? Like freedom of speech? Well, no, we don't share that one either. But a broad tolerance for all faith tradition. Oh, no, we don't share that one. But we do share some values. It's that values, the minute a supposedly serious politician utters the word values, you should boot him out the room and never have anything to do with him. Aaron Everett says, there seems to be a battle between those that want a very consolidated world and the average person who benefits the smaller and less interconnected the governments are. It's a question. We've been sort of tap dancing on the fringes of this question a bit. The problem is the advocates for consolidation run the politics and the voting. So we're very rarely allowed anyone but the Mike Johnson, Pierre Poilievre, Mitt Romney types. Mike Johnson, for non-Americans, is the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. And we have had all this stuff about the last 100 days. And Mike Johnson put out this complete wanker tweet saying, promises made, promises kept, and listing all these things that Trump had done by executive order. Right now, the Republican Party controls the legislative branch. They control the House and they control the Senate. So why are you just sitting there taking credit for Trump's executive orders? Why don't you try enacting them, some of them, into law, you complete boob? What have you actually been doing since January, Mike Johnson? Anyway, that's who Mike Johnson is. So, continues Aaron, we vote like it's the most consequential elections of our lives, but no matter who we vote for, we always get the one the consolidators want. Trump is the one exception in my life, but he's being wrangled and obstructed by a permanent machine that is not to defeat, that is out to defeat any progress he makes. I don't see how the ideals of representative government can be reasserted by elections. The entire machine of global governments and the bureaucracies have to be dismantled, and if they control the voting mechanisms, we supposedly have to allow us to make those desired changes. I doubt very much we'll ever be given that option. I love the idea of secession and hope Alberta succeeds, should they pursue it. But if the Quebec referenda of the past are any indication, the consolidators will do all they can to stop it. What do you think is the way back to smaller governments? And is there any way to do it without it resulting in violence? Well, the point about the Quebec government is that it's a fake. You know, they had a good excuse in the 60s and 70s and 80s because there was the Cold War and the world was frozen. Then the Cold War ended and immediately there became all these new countries, sovereign states like Ukraine, like Slovenia, well, like all the places we visited on the Mark Steyn Adriatic tour, Slovenia, Croatia, Montenegro, Slovakia, as well as Slovenia. I don't think Slavonia is independent yet, but it's only a matter of time. The point is, if Quebec had wanted to become an independent nation, it could have by now, but it doesn't. It's, you know, as I always say, they want to leave Canada to set up a nation exactly like Canada. Their independence movement, you talk about that referendum, and in the 1990s, a majority of Quebec Francophones voted to leave Canada. But was it Jacques Parizeau? I think it was Jacques Parizeau, who was the premier at the time, pointed out the Anglophone vote, the small Anglophone vote and the Allophone vote had defeated them and provided the margin of victory. But it wasn't a real... I had this conversation with Monsieur Parizeau. He so compromised his call for it. He said, oh, don't worry, we're going to be using the Canadian dollar and we're still going to be having the Canadian passport. So the so-called Monsieur le Président of la République du Québec is going to be swanning around on a passport that says he's a subject of Her Majesty the Queen. He was a friendly fellow and a good-natured fellow, but I had a little argument in person with him about that. I mean, that's not a serious independence movement. You should look at the whereas you have something like Alberta, they're not making a fuss all the time, they're not singing songs about it all the time, we like that Pratt Gilles Vigneault does. They're just simmering, coldly simmering. And that's the question then becomes, you know, OK, you leave Canada. Are you going to do what Quebec wants to do? Have a country that's exactly like the one you left? That's basically like Sinn Féin now. Oh, the IRA. We sing all the old songs because when we do them in the pubs in Boston, all the Irish Catholics and the jihadists who, well, they're not in the pubs, are they? Anyway, they all put a few pennies in the jar and it's great. But they now, Sinn Féin now, is the pansiest revolutionary movement on earth, because they want to leave the country they're in to set up one exactly like it. And as Aaron points out, we actually need a secession movement that's going to undo the universal crap, whether it's from Ottawa or whether it's from London or whether it's from Washington or whether it's from Berlin or whether it's Paris. I'll get behind a revolutionary movement that wants to do away, basically, with a century of profound encroachments on self-government by the people. Toby Pilling says, when you set up your paramilitary organization... Yeah, I've been saying that. If I had my life to live over again, I'm gonna forget about all this stuff, and I'm just going to go straight to setting up a paramilitary organization. And I said, actually, in the time that remains to me, I may do it anyway. What name would I give to my paramilitary organization? Well, my favorite paramilitary organization is the one in the Philippines. It's the jihadist group in the Philippines who are called MILF. MILF is a great name. Don't you think MILF is a great name for a paramilitary organization? I am so furious that they got to MILF before I did. I would have liked to call my paramilitary organization MILF, so maybe I'll have to call it Cougar instead. Maybe that would work. Or maybe it won't. If you've seen Mrs. Carney dancing... She basically, did you see her dancing on Victory Night? She's like whatever she is. What's the woman in Seinfeld called? Elaine, when she dances. That's how Mrs. Carney dances. So maybe Cougar and MILF wouldn't work anymore. This has been Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A. That's going to do it for today. Do stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen is going to round up the internet as only she can, and we'll bring you up to date on that story that I mentioned right at the top of the show about Israel's enemies basically have set the whole country alight, and there's very strong winds whipping those flames about. So we hope all the Independence Day ceremonies for tomorrow have been cancelled. We hope if you are in that part of the world that you stay safe. But Laura will bring you up to speed on that with Laura's Links tomorrow. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, do come on in. The water's fine. Stay safe, stay free.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. Rights reserved.